Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening. Wherever you get your podcast, we appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time. I got into a fight with Toronto fans. I feel like I should tell you about that. The Lakers situation, even crazier than we thought it was. Or is it? And your voicemails about your worst airplane experiences, and they better be terrible. But first. Hey, man, I absolutely 100% had no way. No, I did not believe the Toronto Raptors were going to be in the NBA Finals. I thought they was about to get that broom to the booty. Incorrect. They took that broom. It's like a karate movie. Like, the Bucks was about to hit them with that broom. They grabbed that thing, turned it around, put that broom up to their necks. And then next thing you know, they the captain now. It's kind of how it went. I mean, do you have a better explanation? It's like they tried to hit Kawhi Leonard with the broom, and Kawhi got the biggest hands in the world, just snatched that thing away, and then started beating the hell out of him. They like, cool, but we got Giannis, this big old 7-foot doll dude come in there. Kawhi just hit him at the knees and be like, I bet you can't get a shot off. Oh, you can't get a shot off now, can you? And then next thing you know, the Raptors with a coach that I don't think is good, with a bench that appears to be incredibly thin, with a point guard that we have historically had zero faith in the postseason, with a center that's 157 years old, and they're going to the finals. And they beat them. Like, this isn't like this was some matter of luck or anything else. This was in large part a matter of Kawhi Leonard being that dude in a way that, yo, we didn't really know that he was that dude. And a part of this that I think doesn't get discussed enough is a whole lot of people were vindicated by making this move. And I think it's discussed, like it's brought up, but there are not many teams in the NBA that would have had the heart to make that move to trade DeMar DeRozan to find a way to get Kawhi Leonard for just 1 year. At least they're going into it having to only expect that they are going to have him for 1 year. They fired a coach who won 59 games. Now, I don't know if they got here because they had a different coach, but they fired a coach who won 59 games, right? After a season where the indignity that they suffered was that they lost to LeBron James again. They turned that thing upside down. The other one that I don't think is discussed, tell me this, Gabe. You think if Kawhi Leonard is a San Antonio Spur, that the Spurs go to the NBA Finals?
I do not.
Okay, because people did not like how things went with Kawhi at the end in San Antonio. I think that that's something that's probably more of a collective failure than it is to put on one side. But the thought about leaving the Spurs was you don't leave a great organization like that and the chance that they're going to give you to win and everything else. And now this dude is in the NBA Finals. And not only is he in the NBA Finals, I feel like he in the NBA Finals in a way that I did not expect from him. I feel like the last time we saw Kawhi in the playoffs, I feel like we got a hint as to truly what kind of like alpha type cat that he could be. Like he had that bananas game against Memphis in the playoffs that year. And I was just like, oh, okay. I thought that you was like one of these dudes that's just part of the system with the Spurs. Oh, my fault, dog. You's a beast. Sorry. Didn't quite get that. Remember that 20 some point lead they had on the Warriors in game one, in 2017 before he got hurt? You remember that?
I do, and I was going to say that brings us to the finals coming up on Thursday where you have Kawhi facing the Warriors after what you just mentioned, him giving the Warriors a run for their money.
He did, and I mean, and clearly a lot of it was him by himself because you saw what happened when he went out of that game. Right? He's doing like, okay, the weakness in Kawhi's game, playmaking. He was not a guy who got shots for other people. He did plenty of that in the course of this series. Like, I don't think you ever going to be in a situation where you're like, hey, Kawhi, run the offense. But Kawhi is getting shots for other people. This dude's out here pulling down like 17 boards. Like he's putting up Jokic lines. Except he ain't 7 feet tall. And this while shutting down Freaky Greeky. And the thing with Freaky Greeky is he has been muscling everybody, right? What I think is underrated is that we understand that Giannis is like a big, strong dude, but a dude that strong, but also that long and that fast, he's like a one-man fast break. He's splitting all kinds of traps and everything else. There's not really one person that can just put an arm bar up and be like, all right, I can shut this guy down. Kawhi Leonard did that. Now, granted, he had some help from his friends, but Kawhi Leonard, just raw strength, just muscled that dude. Like, what he has done has been a combination, to me, of sheer force and three-pointers. He's made that happen. And now, all of a sudden, the Raptors are in the finals, and I don't really think they can win, but if Kevin Durant does not come back, and I feel like at this point we can only presume that he is not. Dude, if Kevin Durant doesn't come back and Kawhi is able to play good defense on Steph Curry, because Pablo made a good point where he's like, he thinks what they're going to do with Kawhi is have Kawhi guard Draymond Green, and then by guarding Draymond Green, that slows down the Warriors' ability to run the pick and roll with Curry and Green, because now Kawhi is switched on Curry, and Curry don't want that. Curry don't want that at all. Literally, is there any person in the United States that's willing to say that the Raptors are going to win this series?
All the NBA TV guys who are coincidentally from Canada are picking the Raptors.
Oh, you talking about the starters?
Yeah.
Okay, I used to work with them. You know, I used to work for a company out of Canada.
Oh, yes, I do.
Yeah, that'll come up a little bit later in our discussion. But yeah, no. This is like, I'm not at the place where I can say that here's where I've gotten with the Raptors. I'm not saying they won't win. Because before this, I definitely said, I got a text I sent to the group text. Because before the series against Milwaukee, I told the guys at work, I was like, without Kevin Durant, I think the Raptors or the Bucks could give the Warriors a good run. And then the Raptors looked so bad in those two games in Milwaukee. And I was like, that's one of the dumbest things I've ever said. As if I would say something dumb. Look at them now. I think they could give them a run. Don't you like it when you come back to being right? That's why folks don't want to be admitting that they wrong. They don't want to admit that they wrong because they ain't wrong necessarily, like, yet. Like, just because you wrong right now don't mean you're going to be wrong later. Now, I'm not encouraging you to refuse to admit that you are wrong, right? I'm telling you that when that happens, just be like, yo, man, I think I might have been wrong about that. But when you come back around to being right, I don't really feel like there's nothing to stop you from getting back to right where you was in the beginning and being like, I told y'all. Yeah, I had to. You know what I was doing in the middle? I was being humble.
Convenient silence at that time.
I'm just saying, that's what I was doing. I was being humble. I'm willing to acknowledge the possibility that I might be wrong. I think that's a gross miscalculation that many of you have about your boy. I am willing to tell you that I am wrong. And if I am wrong, I will tell you that I am wrong. However, if I come back around to being right, that means you wrong now. You gonna admit that? Oh, that's right. Because I'm the only one that got to say they wrong, right? Okay. I ain't even going to ask you to admit that you was wrong in that circumstance. I'm going to just come back over here to being right again. I hadn't thought about it like that, had you?
Dropping bombs on people
that's
today.
That's what I'm saying, man. It's okay to say you're wrong when you think you're wrong, but then you get to go back to being right. There it is. I mean, I don't think they will win. Like, I don't want y'all to think I said nothing like totally preposterous, but I think they have a chance to give them a run. I'll be very curious to see how game one goes, and then we can do some math and we can figure some things out. And, you know, the Raptors got some dudes that's been to the finals before where they got three players who have been in the finals. Kawhi, Danny Green, and what's his name? Ibaka?
Oh, we're forgetting about beloved Patrick McCaw.
Oh, yes. You know why I forgot about him? I don't think I've seen him play a minute.
Yeah, I was going to say, you forgot that he was still in the league.
Yeah, I only know that he is there because for some reason, people have been writing stories about his mysterious departure from the Warriors. And I was like, I mean, I suppose it was a mystery, but I didn't know anybody was really paying enough attention to have been mystified.
And then a brief appearance for him with the Cavaliers.
Oh, that's right. He was on the Cavaliers.
Yeah, in between the Raptors and the Warriors. Brief appearance there.
How'd he get to the Raptors? He get cut or something?
Yeah, he must have gotten cut, I believe. But now he's sowing state secrets for the Raptors.
I have no idea how tall he is. Like, that is my measure for how much I know about your NBA game or how closely I pay attention to you is like, do I know how tall you are? He's like, is he like a 6'3 type guy?
He's 6'7.
Okay. See?
A little taller than that.
So I feel like the NBA has the following types of guys. There's like 6 foot type of guys, like 6'3 type of guys, like 6'7 type of guys, and like 7 footer type of guys, 6'11 type of guys. And so you kind of generally fall somewhere in one of those spaces. Up until this postseason, Ersan Ilyasova was a gentleman that I had somewhere in maybe two or three of those. I just wasn't sure. I'd watched him play. I knew where he was from. Just couldn't quite visualize how tall he was. He just never played for a team that required me to pay close attention. Till last year. Patrick McCaw, I never really had to pay no attention to him.
He doesn't seem like a 6'7 type guy. He seems more like a 6'5 type of guy.
Yeah, I don't even know if it's fair for me to say he doesn't seem like a 6'7 type of guy, because I don't know what kind of guy he actually seems like.
Yeah, I just remember his brief appearances for the Warriors where he seemed more like a 2 guard as opposed to a 3.
Yeah, I got no frame of reference for his basketball game.
Did you see the picture of Pop and Kerr out dining?
I did not.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's, people were like, oh, discussing how to destroy the robot you helped build with Kawhi.
I tell you this, though, that robot, the robot we got is not the robot that left San Antonio. Popovich was not using him in this way at all.
How is that?
I just think that, I mean, I don't think this isn't a knock on Popovich, but this is a lot more, all right, Kawhi, go get it. This is not nearly as scheme-based as the Spurs stuff was. So this is like, I'm going to get this basket and you can't really stop me. That's what I think we got here in large part. The series, but we got game one in Toronto. I messed up and said I wanted to see the Raptors get swept just so you could watch Drake weep as they lost at home. But it turns out they have the home court advantage. Didn't know that. My bad. And so they'd have to go 5 in order for this to happen in front of Drake. And I just want him to chill out a little bit. Because here's my question. Do you think he's really like this?
I think so.
See, I don't. Let me tell you why. And I want to use Spike Lee as a point of comparison because people have been like, is Drake the new Spike Lee? And I'm like, no, here's the thing about Spike. Spike was not doing that stuff so that he could be on camera. Spike had probably been doing this since he was 10 or 11 years old, if not younger, right? Like Spike was a classic New York heckler. This is what he did. And he was doing that stuff basically from as soon as he got the seats. And by the way, you want to talk about calling your shots. Spike Lee getting courtside seats for the Knicks in like 1986 before he was really somebody. Gabe, that's a flex.
It's a finesse move.
He
right
probably
there.
Had to borrow money to do that. You know, like that's a strong move from Spike. But Spike is like classically that dude. We've been seeing Drake at basketball games for a long time before he became the character that he is now. Like it wasn't always this. He wasn't always kicking it in this steez. And so now he knows the camera's on him and it's like the Drake show. That's what it is for him. It is the Drake show. And that, it's a little annoying. Are you one of those?
A supporter of Drake?
Yes.
In the sense that he's allowed to do what he does on the sidelines or just a fan of his music?
Well, it's kind of number three. So like, fan of his music, but that's a separate discussion with like his whole get down. You know what I mean? Like he got some songs I like, but I can't so much rock with his get down. Think about that song he did where he got drunk and called a girl on the phone. The Barman's Room? Was you about that?
Yeah, I think that's where he lost me.
Okay. Good to know. Good to know. Good to know. I can close these LinkedIn pages for new producers. You gave us the right answer. Appreciate it greatly. But also, did you see he apparently got a tattoo of number 30 and number 35 on his wrist, which are the numbers of Steph Curry and Kevin Durant?
Yeah, I saw that and I was wondering if it was doctored.
I would hope so, right?
I guess we don't know for sure, do we?
I mean, I would really hope so, right? Like, I would. Can you imagine? Can you imagine looking at the dude and being like, look, this is what I want?
Maybe that's why he's always rocking the long sleeve during the playoffs.
I mean, he can't have that out here in the streets now, can he? And the thing I will say about Drake, though, and I've said this before, and I'll say this again. Drake is doing what a significant portion of the population would do if they had access to the things that Drake has access to, right? A whole lot of y'all are jock riders, and y'all would be out here jock riding the way Drake has. You'd be out here doing layup lines with the Kentucky basketball team, and I'll give him credit. I am petrified of the idea of playing basketball in front of people in a way that could turn into a gif. I would hate to be that. I don't have that kind of self-confidence. Drake went out there in them layup lines putting up them broke jumpers. And you know what? You know what I felt like that was? That felt to me, and this is where I get to give Drake some credit. That must be freedom right there. And I know, and you know how I know that's freedom? Because watching him put up that broke jumper in the layup in the lines with Kentucky and then going back and getting to the back in the line, tell me that ain't like watching white folks dance. You want to dance? You dance. It don't matter who watching. Mm-mm. If that's what you want to do, you get out here and do that. And that to me is freedom. And I think freedom, we all want freedom. Everybody out here trying to be as free as we possibly can. And Drake was free to put up them broke jumpers in front of the world. Can't worry about what another person think. That's liberation. And baby, I want it. So I will not hate on Drake in that regard. I just think he's comporting himself like a herb on the sideline. How about that? Also, before we kind of move to something else, this has got to be a really strange time for Kevin Durant, doesn't it?
Incredibly strange, especially with everything that's going on with him and Broussard.
Yeah, yeah, that stuff. And so I do a television show. And one thing about doing a job that is on television is when you are not at work, you can see what things are like when you're not at work. And so when you look up and it look like everybody, like, I mean, I've been in this place before. Sometimes you look up, people got a little more pep in their step when you're not at work. You know what I mean? They, like something would happen. Like, it make you look at yourself and be like, yo, man, do I need to, like, you know, work on, you know, how I do this or how I do that? Or are there some things I need to pay attention to? You know, that kind of stuff. I one time came back from vacation and after watching, I was like, yo, I need to call my boss and I need to talk to him. Cause I felt like, yo, I don't know about this, right? Like, am I doing something wrong? Everybody seems so much happier. Like, I've done that. I no lie. I've absolutely done that. When most of y'all don't come to work, y'all ain't really paying no attention to what's going on. You come back and people are like, oh, good to have you back, whatever. But you don't actually see what the fruits of it are or whatever, combined with whatever's already in your mind. Like, you don't have that. Kevin Durant is in that same situation. And whenever he doesn't play, they win. And I tell you, I get it. That's got to be kind of rough. And so people out here talk about, yeah, you know, are they better without me? No. What am I supposed to say? Right? On top of the fact that I actually, in spite of the wins and stuff, don't think that they're better without him. But he's like, nah, this is preposterous. But he got to be watching it and wondering a little bit, like, damn, are they a little better without me? Like, I'm supposed to be the best player in the world and y'all better without me? And I feel very confident saying this part. Like, if I'm telling you that I had those concerns, can you imagine what it's like inside of Kevin Durant's head? Like, no disrespect to that man, but I get the feeling from where I stand. And Gabe, you tell me if I'm wrong here. I feel like I'm wired a little different than him, if you know what I mean.
That's fair.
If I can know exactly what that circumstance is like, I can't imagine what that circumstance is like for him. Damn, dog. I'll say one last thing and then we'll go, by the way. Shout out to Kevin Durant. I saw a clip of him. We was working on Highly Questionable. And that boy looked like he got him a proactive deal. And I'm like, I don't know what took so long, but there you go. Look like you make $30 million a year, damn it. He's got a lot of decisions to make about what he's going to do with his hair. But I think the place to start is with a brush. That's before we get to any long run decisions, there's some things that we can make better right now. And all you need is a brush. That's it. Go from there. All right, man. So I got into a Twitter fight. This happens. All right. I may or should have not. All right. So basically, I booked a flight to go hang out in Atlanta for Memorial Day weekend. I booked it a couple months ago or maybe a month and a half ago. Either way. And if you know me, I notoriously do not do things in advance. I like flexibility, right? So I'm trying this new thing where I'm trying to do some things in advance. Okay, cool. So anyway, one of my very good friends is having his 40th birthday party on Sunday. And so I flew in to make sure that I could go to that. Somehow I didn't check the schedule at work and they had us working on Memorial Day, which is something I have to tell you that I had never considered was possible. But they had us working on Memorial Day. Like, what? So I just happened to schedule a flight that left Atlanta at like 9:30. So I was going to be able to get here in time for work. But this means I got to wake up early and get my stuff ready and go to the Atlanta airport and get on this plane and fly 2.5 hours and then hit the ground. And, I mean, you know, I wasn't necessarily in the greatest of moods as that went. You know, sometimes you happen, get a little cranky. But anyway, I hadn't been on the internet very much over the course of the weekend. But I happened to come across this thread that a gentleman in Toronto did, and he said that this thread was going to be about sports racism and why you'll wind up rooting for the Maple Leaf emoji. So I guess he just talking about all the Canada, all Toronto. I don't know what that was in. You could have just put the Canada flag. I don't know. But anyway, he put a Maple Leaf out there. And it's about the dude in the turban, right? His name is Nav. Gabe, you familiar with the gentleman, the Raptor superfan with the turban?
Oh, I'm familiar. I'm familiar with that thread as well as your subsequent thread.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that dude, like, I'm trying to lay it out for the people, you know? So if you see the dude at the Raptors game, he's got the turban on. I was about to say the big turban, but honestly, I don't know if turbans come in different sizes. I'm unfamiliar, so I figured that might have been inappropriate of me to say, but it appears to be a sizable piece of haberdashery. And so apparently he immigrated to Canada. And the dude's story was like, yeah, so he immigrated to Canada. He's an engineer. But because he's a brown guy in a turban, he was not able to get a job as an engineer. So he had to go start selling cars, and then apparently became the bomb car salesman. And he moves all the cars, and he loves the Raptors. And then the thread went to this place where it's like, yeah, you know, when you go to a Raptors game, you see people of all these different backgrounds. And you'll see like a Korean guy talking to a guy with locks, and they'll be eating poutine. You know what they call a gay poutine? It's not Putin.
That would
be bad. But yeah, so, you know, you see these things, and it was like, you won't see that in the United States, and you wouldn't see it in Milwaukee. And then it ends with this thing about how, I think he said, he called the super fan, his name is Nav. And he says that our neighbor to the south could learn something from us. And I'm like, dog, why you come over here banging on us to try to big up yourself? You know, I don't really like being put in the uncomfortable position of feeling like, hey, man, you need to watch what you're saying about racism in the United States. But I was like, hey, hold on. This doesn't add up, right? Now, of course, by the time I had seen it, the thing had been retweeted close to 25,000 times because it was the kind of heartwarming sort of story on race that people like, because ultimately it is like the kind of talk about race that can make white people feel good. You know? But of course, as is often the case, when it's the kind of talk about white people that makes people feel good, it's based on something that fundamentally doesn't make any sense. The dude was trying to make the argument that Nav and his success as a car salesman speaks to Canada having, he didn't say this exactly, I want to be clear, but basically Canada is almost this utopian place on matters of race. And as a testament to this is the guy who couldn't get a job in his chosen profession because of discrimination, so he had to go start selling cars. And I'm like, hey, homie. That's not as heartwarming as you think. Like, that's what I said to begin with. I was like, that's not as charming. This thread is not as charming as the author thinks. And it wasn't charming in a way. I don't think he was at all possible to think of how somebody else might see this or to follow like his own logical path on this one. And then in response, I just had all these people from Toronto who are hitting me back, trying to explain to me how Toronto has this diversity that you don't find in the United States. And I'm like, that you don't find in the United States? Like, I mean, there are plenty of places in the United States where you're not going to find that level of diversity. But that's also the case for Canada. Like, they weren't telling me Canada greater than the United States. They were telling me Toronto greater than the United States, which told me a whole lot about why people who are not from Toronto get a little salty. People from Canada, but not from Toronto, get a little salty with them about this stuff. But I'm like, hey, nah, man, you're not about to fool me with this one. And so, of course, I say this, and then I get people like, you're the only person who can find something negative with this. And I think that I certainly was not, and I was probably just the only one who just wasn't afraid of, like, people getting mad at me on the internet. It's a fairly common occurrence. But NBA arenas, I would say probably with the exception of a couple of places, what they described there, you could kind of find all over the place. Right? Like, the idea of a dude with locks talking to a Korean dude, I bet you can find that happening at an arena in Memphis. I bet all the money in the world are you going to see something like that with the Warriors. Like, you can find these things at NBA arenas. Like, that doesn't really tell us anything. But the United States is not quite as monolithic as these folks seem to believe. And the basis of comparison was Milwaukee. And there are metrics that say that Milwaukee is the most segregated city in America. But, like, if you go to the Barclays Center, like, all the stuff they talked about right there. Gabe, I had somebody try to tell me that Toronto was, quote, infinitely more diverse than New York.
Yeah, that's a stretch.
Yeah, and I was like, yo, even if Toronto is more diverse, and by some metrics it certainly is, I was like, y'all are wilding right now. yo, fall back. And I wasn't even really trying to say nothing bad about Toronto, because I like Toronto a lot. I used to work, you know, for a company out of Toronto, so I spent a decent bit of time up there. I like Toronto, but like don't fool yourselves on this. But either way it goes, you tell a story that don't make no sense, and somebody points out the fact that it don't make no sense, and that's just what it is, man. I had people just hitting me all this time, and they're like, yeah, well, if you ever come to Toronto, yo, I've been to Toronto. The first time I went to Toronto was 10 years ago. Like, I've done this. They was just coming at me on all these angles in this. And look, all I'm trying to tell you is, A, it's really cool that some people can hang out together at the NBA arena, but that's not the actual measurement about what life as it relates to race is in the place in which you live. Like, I could find those things in New York. Yeah, New York, wild racist too. That's what it is. Number two, you're not going to tell me about the absence of racism by telling me the most incredible success story. That's an outlier. Like, that's not representative of the sample. When you talk to the people who are in the middle, that's when you find out what this is, because it's worth noting that the people in the middle constitute the majority of the people that you're talking about. You talk about them folks over there, middle and more to the left of the distribution. Yeah, then you're gonna get a little something when you get some information there. Like that's what's going to tell you the tale. It's not going to be stuff like this. And so I wasn't saying nothing bad about Toronto. I will say another thing, though, that I learned in this, and this is a fascinating thing when you get to talking to, like, Canadians about Canada. I remember the 2010 Winter Olympics opening ceremonies. That's when I first started working for the Score. And the Score had me doing a satellite radio show where the production was out of Toronto, but we were on Sirius. But anyway, I remember the opening or the closing ceremonies, I think it was. Either the opening or closing, I can't remember which, for the Olympics. And it was like all... It was all through the lens of, like, what Canada thinks of Americans and what Americans think of Canada. Like, I can't remember all the particulars, but it was very focused on the United States. And I was just like, yo, no disrespect, but we don't be thinking about y'all. Like, ain't nobody trying to put up no wall to stop y'all from coming in. Ain't nobody really up on what y'all doing. That's just not how the United States rolls. Like, I'm from Texas. Texas don't give a damn what they do in Louisiana, right? Like, we are an insular people here in the United States. Maybe we should pay more attention to y'all. I don't know. But I watched that, and I was totally fascinated by how much thought that Canada had been giving to the United States, or Canadians seemed to be giving to the United States, because I had never thought about Canadians a day in my life until I started working with them. It was wild. And so all this was like this whole... Well, we're not as racist as they are in the United States. And I'm like, hey, I don't know how to tell you, but that's not much of an accomplishment. Like, that's not going to get you very far. Like, I bet you can bench press more than I can, too. But that ain't going to get you to the Olympics. Like, okay, cool. If that's what you got, that's what it is. Oh, man. No. You can do a little better than this. I mean, I tell you, you can indeed, but so much of like people's self-esteem and identity about the places where they're from is the idea of fairness. And people really don't believe that they can come forward and talk about or extol the greatness of whatever the place is that they live unless they believe that that place is fundamentally fair. Like, I think that's kind of a consistent thought across the board, that if you're going to make an objective argument about the greatness of a place like this, it has to be based on some notion of fairness, and you have to come up with some justification of whatever happens to call it fair. And that leads people to tell all kinds of lies about their hometowns. All kinds of lies. And all I'm saying is, you ain't gotta lie, bruh. All right, we'll be back in a minute to talk about the dysfunction of the Lakers again. But first, are your credit card bills keeping you up at night? Interest rates in the double digits? Be smart and pay off your credit card balances with a credit card consolidation loan from LightStream. Get a fixed rate as low as 5.95% APR with AutoPay. You could save thousands in interest. Get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000 and there are no fees. You can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. Plus, LightStream is a division of SunTrust Bank, one of the nation's largest financial institutions, so you can have complete peace of mind. Want to save even more? My listeners get an additional interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is to go to LightStream.com/Bomani. LightStream.com/Bomani. Subject to credit approval, rate includes 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit LightStream.com/Bomani for more information. Man, I was getting ready to come to work this morning. Next thing I know, I find out there's a Lakers story. I got a text from one of our producers, Cortez, sends me a text and he's like, yo, bombshell. And I start reading. It's like a story about the Lakers being a little kooky, a little crazy. Okay. Like, no big deal. We've seen these before. One of them, one of the stories is about, like, Rich Paul. He flying on the airplane, and people saying it's kind of irregular for an agent to be on a team flight or something like that. And Rich Paul has since said it was only one time, whatever. But then I got to where they was really going with this, man. Two things. One, apparently Magic came up in the office and had them people shook. Magic. I don't know. They said Magic wasn't in the office very much, but apparently when he was in the office, it was a lot. They say Magic out here laying down the law when he comes in there. And somebody said what they couldn't tell was whether or not on a given day Magic was going to come to the office or Irvin was going to come to the office. And I found that to be very interesting because a friend of mine, his wife worked at one of Magic's ventures. And the thing he told me, he's been telling me this for years. He was like, there is Magic and there is Irvin, and that Irvin is a killer. Like, Magic come in there and do all that smiling and grinning. And we met Magic up here, but they say Irv is a killer. And so they didn't know from day to day whether or not Magic was going to show up or whether or not Irvin was going to show up, which is kind of funny because Magic is the most likable person in the world, right? But if Magic wasn't Magic, Magic would just be Irvin. And we got to understand that the way that people view and talk about a dude like Magic is different than they view and talk about a dude named Irvin. Especially if that dude named Irvin is coming in there like trying to shake people up. Now, I can't tell because the picture that was painted by that story was basically that Magic had everybody shook to the point where they said that there were two people in that office who were having panic attacks because the Lakers office situation was that stressful. And that's part of why I need to get some like clarity on just how much Magic was actually coming to work, because I don't know how much panicking everybody doing and Magic ain't coming but 1 or 2 days a week. But they told one story about a woman who said she was having panic attacks about working with Magic. And the story was that this woman was responsible for booking a car service for a draft prospect. So the draft prospect gets to the airport and the car was not there to pick up the draft prospect. And they said that Magic called the woman in the office. It was termed that he berated her and that Magic told her that if she made that mistake again, she would be fired. And that the woman was very jarred by this. And I don't know how Magic talked to her, right? If that is the end result of the conversation that you've had with somebody, the conversation has probably not been a productive one. So I'm inclined to believe that there's something in the tone that Magic took with this woman that was not the way to do it, and it didn't work out well. However, if your job is booking cars and you don't book a car for a draft prospect, the next time you do that, you are going to be fired. Am I crazy, Gabe? Like, am I losing my mind?
Not crazy at all.
Okay, I'm just checking here. Like, I don't think the idea of telling people if you do that again, you're fired is like, no. That, like, Gabe got stakes, man. Gabe got stakes. And one thing about Magic that you got to remember is that Magic is a professional athlete. Like, that is the world that they live in. That is the space that they're in. If you can't do this, there's somebody else right here who was able to do that job. So, in some part, the characterization I thought of Magic, it seemed to be that Magic was not really an easy dude to work for, but it also sounds like Magic was the new sheriff in town. And based on what we've seen from some other stuff in the way that the Lakers do business, there might have been some things that needed some tightening up in the Lakers ship. And then Magic showed up and maybe did a little bit too much of that or more than people were in a position to handle. Look, another thing my man told me, they said, Magic, good to tell you, man. Magic was like, look, you are replaceable. Like, that's his rap. That's what he does. Man said, didn't I tell you that one of Magic's go-to moves is say that you could be replaced at any time? That's what he did. The only thing about that, though, if that's going to be your approach, people got to trust you. Like, I feel like if that's the way that you're going to conduct business, you need to be around a lot. And people need to believe on some level that even though I can be replaced, you do care about me. This is just what it is, right? But if you are an absentee sort of cat, you can't operate like that. But that's the principle that people work with. What's the idea is that if monitoring is low, enforcement must be high, which is to say that if you are not around a lot, the only way that you can prevent people from messing up is to make the punishments very harsh when they do something wrong. Like, that's the idea behind that. that can lead to some really unhealthy outcomes. But I understand the logic that underlies it. And Magic seems to be guilty of some of that. But no, I don't. People need to be real about this. You can be fired, whoever you happen to be. You can, in fact, be fired. Especially if you don't do that. Gabe, how you not booked the car?
You had one job. Yes. If you have one job, if you have like one box to check and you do not check that box, then you should not have that job.
Yo, right? shouldn't y'all software have all that in one, like when you book the flight? Would you like to book a car? Yes. Yes, I would. Right. Shouldn't that be next in line? I feel like that's how I work with when we do travel. Right. Like, it's wild. But yeah, Maddie seemed to be tripping. But did you have a chance to read it yet, Gabe?
Yeah, I read bits and pieces of it, but there's only so much I could take.
Yeah, I admit similar, but I imagine there was one story that jumped out to me that had to jump out to you.
And which one is that?
So, apparently, Rob Pelinka tells a story about Kobe having seen The Dark Knight, and that after Kobe saw The Dark Knight, that he wanted to meet Heath Ledger. Because Heath Ledger was so locked into that role, and so he wanted to talk to him about how he managed to get himself so locked in, and that Rob Pelinka made that happen, and that he and Heath Ledger had dinner, except for the fact that that movie came out 6 months after Heath Ledger died. And it is with that story that we learn that Rob Pelinka is that dude who just be lying. He just be making stuff up. You know what he does? He tells stories. Like, they referred to him as a storyteller, but no. He's not a storyteller. He be telling stories. It's not the same thing. He be out here lying. And that is hilarious to me. Not even somebody on this, like, not like a scam artist, right? But just somebody who just be out here telling lies, right? Lying about stuff that there's no reason to lie about. Like, I know why Elizabeth Holmes told those lies, right? But I'm talking about cats. So those of you who have followed me for a long time have heard this story before, but I'm going to tell it again because some people haven't heard it, because you need to understand who the person is that I'm talking about when I'm talking about the person who just be out here telling lies. So I knew this dude in college, and he told a story about how one time he was hooping at a park and he dunked on some dude. And after he dunked on the dude, everybody started laughing at the dude. And so the dude left. And then he came back and he shot up the court. And then after he shot up the court, he came and put the gun to my man's head. And my man was just like, psh, and walked away. And so we asked him, what kind of gun was it? He's like, what they call it? AK-47? Okay. That man said somebody showed up to the court with the AK-47, sprayed it up, and then just walked over to him and put that hot AK-47 barrel on his head, and he walked away.
Yeah, I may not know a person that is of that school of thought.
Have you ever met Stu Gatz, Gabe?
I have not met Stu Gatz.
Okay. Like, Stu Gatz is kind of this guy. But everybody knows that dude who just be out here lying. In fact, maybe that'll be the voicemail for next week. The best lie you heard from your friend who be out here lying, right? I mean, I've heard there's some people who will just tell you amazing, amazing, amazing tales where you're just like, wow, you just be coming up with these lies. Rob Pelinka is the dude just be out here telling lies. And I don't know why that is so funny to me that the tall tale teller is the guy that's running the Lakers. Like, guys like that, I don't even get mad at you for telling these stories. I want you to tell me more of these stories. I want to hear another one of these stories because I love the stories that those people concoct. Like that dude I went to college with, this dude told me once he was riding on a jet ski and he saw something and he thought it was a ramp and he hit it with the jet ski and then he went flying across the water. And he said he later found out that what he thought was a ramp was actually a manatee.
Oh, no.
Yeah, right. And he said that like one of the three manatees left, he hit that thing with a jet ski.
Oh, my God. Just pathological liar.
Yeah. No, hold on. Pathological liar is a different kind of person, right? Here's what I mean. This cat just be like making stuff up and like telling stories. The pathological liar is the guy that I call a point A to point B liar, right? Like, that's the person who just needs to tell a lie to get out of this situation that he's in. And then it just becomes like a mountain of lies as you go across. But you realize, oh man, this dude is only telling me this story right now. Like, I was once dealing with one of those types of cats, and I was having a discussion with him about some business, and I knew I was being lied to, but this was something I couldn't just let the lie slide. And so I asked a question that he didn't have the answer to. And so he told me, can you hold on for a second? And that dude left me on hold for 10 minutes.
Oh, man.
Because he was just trying to cook up a lie to get him out of that short-term situation. That's the pathological liar. Palenka just be out here making stuff up. That guy is far more entertaining than the pathological liar. Though the pathological liar can be, like, really, really, really funny. Because you're just like, dog, you are this dedicated to this process. They, like a real good pathological liar, they quick. They on their toes. They always got another answer for you. They always like, oh, yeah, well, that, okay, well, that was that. Oh, and you're just like, damn, dog, I got to, at some point, I just got to respect your craft. I got to respect your game. It's just what it gets to be sometimes. And so apparently, yeah, that's Rob Palenka, the storyteller, not that guy.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from security.
This is Ian Duncan. I'm a reporter with the Baltimore Sun. Baltimore has been struggling for about 3 weeks now with a ransomware attack that knocked out the city's computers. It was discovered on May the 7th. It shut down the email for city employees and the city's payment system, which made it hard for people to pay things like their water bills or traffic tickets. Perhaps the most dramatic impact was that it shut off the city's property market because there's paperwork that the city has to process before any houses can be bought or sold. They moved pretty quickly to get that back online and then work with a kind of manual workaround that relies on people doing everything by hand. The city has said that it might take months to completely recover from this, and it's not clear how long exactly it's going to take. They haven't shared a whole bunch of information about how the hackers got in. It's a fairly standard ransomware attack. Their hackers are asking for $100,000 in Bitcoin to unlock the city's files, but the city's refused to pay, so it's going through a process of trying to restore the systems. The city's leaders have said that they need to try and be safe, so they're not moving too quickly. Perhaps one of the most interesting developments was over the weekend. The New York Times reported that there was some technology that had been developed by the National Security Agency that was used as part of this attack. That's got one of the city's top leaders calling on the federal government to contribute to the cost of the recovery, and members of Congress seeking information from the NSA, which is a spy agency headquartered just down the road from Baltimore.
Hold up, so they're saying that this stuff started with the NSA?
What started with some technology that the NSA uses.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying. This is out here in the streets? And by the way, this is some, like, first-class hating. That's one thing. Nah, I don't want to say that. This is hating. This is hating. And the reason I say this is hating is you telling me Baltimore ain't got enough problems? You can't go mess with somebody else. Like, you got to go mess with them.
Yeah, pick on somebody else, please.
I mean, dog, that is, wow. The game is so bad, bruh. The game is so bad. Let me tell you, when they find out who let that software out, ooh, baby, they gonna call Magic to come talk to that person.
Good God. I mean, the sad part about this, too, is that you would imagine that the IT department in towns and cities across the country aren't equipped to handle stuff like this. And then to be targeted by some next level NSA type stuff is
right.
Like, good God, come on.
What am I supposed to do? Can you imagine what it's like every day when they got to go give the boss the update? Like, you remember the DC sniper?
Yeah.
They would have a press conference every day, and that man would come out every day and do the same thing. I don't know what to tell you. Right? They had nothing. Day after day after day after day after day. You imagine how, like, defeated that man had to feel every time he rolled up to be like, I don't know what to tell you. Everybody got questions. You ain't got no answers. That's what that briefing has to feel like, right?
My briefing is that there is no briefing.
Yeah, I'm not going to be able to make it in today. I see no reason to waste both of our time.
And then they're being held for ransom, and they're like, no, we're not going to pay that ransom. Y'all can have our system.
And you the person that's supposed to be fixing the system.
They don't have to pay their bills, you know, their parking bills and that sort of thing. But then if they're trying to get property sales processed, that's not happening.
Yeah, that is very interesting, right? That there is a certain number of people who this is the best news they've ever gotten. And then there's people that, like, want to buy a house. Two Americas.
All right, Bomani, this next story comes from media.
This is Ingu Kang, a staff writer at Slate. Last week, I wrote about the podcast Running from Cops, which is hosted by Dan Taberski, who previously made Missing Richard Simmons. Running from Cops is a rare must-listen podcast. In 6 compact episodes, Taberski essentially lays out a very convincing case that Cops, which is still on, by the way, and currently in its 31st season, is not only what he calls the most successful reality show in history and the dominant cultural depiction of how real policing works in America, but also pro-police propaganda in which the police departments that cooperate with the show retain full editorial control over what makes it to air. We all know that reality TV tends to cherry-pick the most dramatic events that the camera captures to present storylines and portrayals that don't always conform to the truth. But Running from Cops asks us what we're missing out on when we lazily accept what reality TV tells us. In the riveting final episode, Taberski, who used to be a reality show producer himself, compares an aired segment on Cops to the raw footage of what was shot that night to show that when police are giving a performance of police work for the cameras to fit a particular TV formula, things can go wrong fast.
Cops is still on?
Yeah, it's one of those shows, man.
I don't think I've ever watched an episode of Cops. Because let me tell you, what Mac and Barbara Jones wasn't really doing for fun. Watching the cops chase people down. That was not, we were not killing the time at Jones Manor watching Cops. Just wasn't how that game went. But I have seen, I think the first 48, we've been seeing some stories of people getting shot by the cops with the first 48 cameras around. They want to be on TV. You know, like TV is a powerful thing. And yeah, like we've known this for a long time that, especially the Los Angeles Police Department in particular though, use like depictions in Hollywood to give an image of what their police force was. Like, you know, no, there's no questions about whether or not this is what it is. Yeah, this is making people like, here's the thing about it, man. I imagine there are no episodes of Cops where the cops are like in the wrong. I don't think that's how that works. Not if they got the full control. So it's always been what it is. But that is interesting. I believe I'll check it out.
I certainly think the reality TV aspect of it is something that people don't take into account, and they just watch it and think that, oh, you know, this is exactly what it's like out there in the streets.
Yeah, but I also have to admit that I imagine shows like that have come with a lot of like unintentional humor, like not necessarily appropriate humor to discuss in public, but I bet you'd be laughing.
Yeah, in a sick way as well.
Yeah, that too. But I bet there's also some stuff that you just don't want to admit is funny, but actually is.
Indeed. All right, this last story, it's an outdoor story. The reporter wasn't able to join us this morning for it. The gist of it is there's a lawyer from Colorado that was the 11th person this year to die on Mount Everest. His name was Chris Kulish. He was 62. He was from Boulder, Colorado. He died Monday while descending from the highest summit of the world. His family confirmed in a statement, but the circumstances surrounding his death were a little unclear. There was a record number of climbers that have summited Everest in April and May, the peak climbing months for the year. And last week there were reports of massive crowding, especially near like a particular portion of where climbers have to walk in single file. I just found this story fascinating because it was something, in my opinion, within my lifetime, that was kind of unattainable for most people in the world to try and attempt this climb. But now they've got traffic jams on the mountain. I mean, it's like a life and death situation and you're worrying about whether or not the person tied their shoes or not.
I just want to know the point of climbing a mountain. Is it just to say you did it? Because I have no interest in doing these things. Maybe I just don't seek challenges in the right places. Because I'm like, yo, if this is what I'm hearing, is this one of those things where it's like too late to come down? Because if I get word of this and I just started, no, man, I'm out.
With Everest, because it is the tallest peak on the planet, a lot of it is like this machismo thing where it's like, yeah, I summited that mountain. And, you know, there's another person that died that was trying to do all the top peaks in the world in like the shortest amount of time just so that they can check it off and kind of fill out their Instagram with all of these different things that they've done. But it's, I mean, this is life and death. Yeah. This is not like for fun and games. I feel like when it comes to people who are climbers, a lot of it is done just for the sheer enjoyment of it or like the views that it gives you. But this one is like, nah, that's just like the tallest peak in the world. When you get up there, it's, you can say you've summited it as opposed to doing it for kicks, you know?
Thanks, but no thanks, man. Thanks, but no thanks. We'll be back in a minute with your voicemails, but first, you've heard us talk about Hims and how they're helping guys look their best. If you haven't yet, it's time to see what they're all talking about. 66% of men lose the hair by 35, like me. That's a big problem. The thing is, when you start to notice hair loss, it's too late. Best way to prevent more hair loss is to do something about it while you still got some hair. It's time to get a handle on those precious locks. How will you feel a year from now if it's business as usual up there? Why do guys turn to weird solutions or do nothing when you could go to medicine and science? The solution is for Hims.com. It's a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and other wellness supplements for men. Hims is helping guys be the best versions of themselves with licensed physicians and FDA-approved products to help treat hair loss. No snake oil pills or gas station supplements. It's prescription solutions backed by science. Now, Hims is created by a guy who knows some men's health conversations are easier online than in person. So no more awkward doctor's visits. For Hims connects you to real doctors online. That'll save you hours. It's completely confidential and discreet. You answer a few questions, doctor reviews, and if they determine it's right for you, they can prescribe you medicine to treat hair loss and it's shipped directly to your door. Get the hair loss treatment everyone is talking about. Order now. My listeners can get started with the Hims Complete Hair Kit for just $5 today right now while supplies last and subject to doctor's approval. See website for full details and safety information. This could cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy somewhere else. Go to forhims.com/Bomani. That's FORHIMS.com/Bomani. Forhims.com/Bomani.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bomani. So you were flying home. You put out a question asking for people who had wanted to share their stories of the worst airline experience that they've ever had. We got some interesting responses. Our first one's from Richie in North Carolina.
What's up, Bomani? This is Richie from Durham, and I got an airline story. So this is more a story about not being on a plane than being on a plane, but whatever, let's get into it. So, this is back in 2016. I was working in Cleveland at the time, and I was trying to visit my sister in Boston for July 4th. So what I'd usually do was get free airport parking by going to the airport Marriott outside the Cleveland airport, parking out back, and then I'd like sweet talk the front desk lady, pretend I was staying there or whatever, so I could get a token for the gate, and I didn't have to pay when I get back. So I do all that. I go straight to the airport after work, and my flight keeps getting delayed and delayed and delayed. It's like hours. And at this point, it's like 2 a.m. in the morning, and I get canceled. So this airline bumps me to the next morning, and they don't give me a lounge, they don't give me a room, nothing like that. So I'm like, all right, I'm just going to go home, get some sleep, come back. So I catch the last shuttle back to the hotel, and I'm getting into my car when they call me and say that they just rebooked me for like a few hours later, the flight's taken off, so I don't have time to go back home, and I'm definitely not trying to pay for a room at this hotel. So I'm stuck sleeping in my car in the hotel parking lot, just hoping security doesn't come knocking on my window with a flashlight, because that's a whole nother situation. So finally, next morning, I get back to the airport, my flight keeps getting rerouted and canceled, I'm in O'Hare, they're telling me they're sending me through Houston, whatever. So by the time I get to my sister's place, it's been like 24 hours since I first left my apartment. And that 24 hours was my birthday. So that's the story how I turned 20 and have not traveled over July 4th weekend since.
That's a bad break.
That's a really bad break. I feel like for as many airplane stories that are horror stories, it's also the trip to the airport and being at the airport and dealing with anything related to airlines.
I'm good with anything but being stuck on the runway. I hate, that's the one. Ooh, on the plane, but not, ooh, that's the one.
You sit there for too long and you start smelling everybody on the plane.
Oh, yeah, like if you ever been stuck on the jetway for like 3 hours just on the ground, it's the most frustrating thing in the world. It's like, yo, we right here, like you can let us off.
Yeah, I was on an airplane a few years back with that type of situation where I was literally sitting there on the tarmac, and then eventually they decided that it was too dangerous to fly out, and they're like, all right, we're going to have to stay here tonight. Everybody's getting their vouchers to a hotel next to the airport. You're going to have to stay the night. That was not happening.
Let me tell you what I'm not about at this stage of my somewhat bourgeois life. The hotel by the airport.
Yeah, not a pleasant experience. Our next one is from Sean in Georgia.
Hey, Bomani, this is Sean from Milledgeville, Georgia. Yes, that Milledgeville where Ben Roethlisberger had his little incident. I got a story for you about an airplane trip. Man, I was taking a family trip this past September to Dubai. Now, that's a 14-hour flight. And as you know, as another tall dude, I'm 6'5", I needed that emergency exit. So I paid those few little dollars to get it on my flight to Dubai. Man, I had all this legroom. I was excited about it. You know how it is. Man, we in the middle of the flight and everybody's up. They got to use the restroom. They're walking around. They got to stretch their legs. That's fine. That's cool. But then these people decided they was just going to stand there and hang out. Now, I paid this money for my legroom, so I got real petty, Will. Man, I started to slouch. I done kicked my legs out. I done took my shoes off. Man, I'm getting real comfortable just because all these people standing up in my space. Man, but tell you what, it got even worse. This little four or five-year-old, he's walking around on the plane, parents not watching him. And this kid had the nerve to sneeze right on my arm. First of all, we on this little Airbus going to Dubai. And this little kid sneezed on my arm. There's germs everywhere. I'm a plane and everything. Man, it was crazy. But on the way back, I lucked out. I didn't get the emergency exit, but I had a whole row to myself where I could stretch out.
I paid my money. Once I heard that, I was like, I'm in.
Yeah, the one thing about being able to afford nicer seats in a plane is more distance from other people and less people in general.
Yes.
And that decreases your odds of someone sneezing on your face or kicking your seat or any number of unfortunate mishaps.
Yep.
All right, this last one, this person didn't give their name, but apparently they were traveling from Vegas.
Yo, Bomani, I'm coming back from Vegas, right? And straight up killed it the last night that I was there. Out all night, gambling, drinking. Checked out the room early so that it would get to the plane on time, get there, still have a little too much to drink, get on that plane, flying back, stop and switch in Chicago, and the lady sitting next to me, when I get in, I sit down, she pulls out one of them big Italian beef things from the airport in Chicago, yo, and that smell hits me, oof, dude, I lost all my in one of those little airplane bags, it was just nasty. Just nasty.
Yikes. Tell you, man, that airport in Vegas, they ain't no wider slice of American life than the TSA line in Vegas. There's everybody in there.
I feel like it makes an interesting point about airport food and restaurants and that sort of thing. These places have to be open, you know, in between like 5 a.m. and midnight, basically. And have you ever done breakfast at the airport, Bo?
Yes.
And what's your breakfast of choice?
I mean, like, I've done it in like the Delta Lounge.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So you got like a little buffet set up.
Yeah,
but okay, I do like the Einstein bagels.
Einstein bagels, okay, fair. I always try and pick something safe when I'm going there that early, so I'll do like a coffee and a croissant or like a coffee and a bagel or something. But when you get there that early, there are people that are over in the hot dog line.
Yes, yes, there are.
There are people getting like double cheeseburgers at like 5 a.m. and I'm like, oh, man,
no.
Don't do it, man. Don't do it. And please don't get it and then sit next to me on the plane. Yes. With the full bag. I mean, my man had like a long night and there was no respect paid.
None. You just, hey, man, Las Vegas did do things to people. But ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our sponsors, Lightstream and Hims. Also, thanks to our, if you haven't heard, contributors. Thanks to Ian Duncan of the Baltimore Sun. Check out his story on Baltimore recovering from a bout with ransomware. Crazy cyber attack. Also, thanks to Ingu Kong of Slate. Check out her story on the podcast, Running from Cops at Slate.com. It's really interesting. Go ahead and check that out. Be sure to subscribe to The Right Time. Check us out wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you're a hater. And be sure to check out the Mina Kimes Show this week with ESPN football analyst Dan Orlovsky. And I think they'll talk about The Bachelorette. Talk to you guys soon. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.